You're listening to the Inside North Central Massachusetts podcast, sponsored by Franklin Professional Associates, excellence in staffing and recruiting, and supported by regional leaders like AIS. We're on it.
Hello and welcome to the Inside North Central Massachusetts podcast. Your host, Travis Condon with the North Central Mass Chamber. We're on the road today down in Worcester at 172 Shrewsbury Street, chatting with the folks from the Worcester Business Journal. Across from me in their conference room, we have Peter Stanton, the CEO and publisher, and Brad Kane, their editor. Both of you, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it, Travis.
Absolutely. Folks are really familiar with the Worcester Business Journal. You have an incredible presence in the area. When I look on your website, it says there's three words that are essential to your mission: inform, engage, and connect. So I wondered if we could start off the program talking about how those three words really guide the stories and the articles that you produce for the Worcester Business Journal.
So as a business journal, obviously, any media outlet, the truth-telling and engaging with, you know, the information in the news of the region is our core mission. As a business journal, we have a little bit of a different audience than, say, your traditional daily newspaper. We're going to target those, you know, business decision makers, you know, throughout central Massachusetts, including our central Massachusetts. And I think that if inform is, you know, basically number one step in our mission. Peter, you might have actually written that tagline, so I don't know if you want to take up the next two.
Yeah. Well, the idea is, of course, to live to it, right? Or
yeah.
or revise your tagline. So if Brad, I think, covered inform, right, which is sort of the core mission of sort of what kind of news are we delivering through that lens of the business scene. Connect, I think, is how do we make that a dynamic with our audience, right? If you're interviewing someone live on the radio, there's people calling in, right? So with us, it's not like we get a lot of letters to the editor, but we're out there with a weekly poll. And so we've got a sort of our finger on that pulse and having people respond to a very local issue, a regional issue, a statewide issue. Every now and then it's sort of the local take on a national, you know, something going on nationally. And we'll get hundreds of responses to that, and we not only can sort of get people engaged with the content, because it's often, you know, Brad will come up with that question based on, you know, a story that we're writing about, so it sort of resonates off some content in the paper, but we'll run the results of that in the print edition, and it's where we really get comments. And then the last one, is really about events, right? How do you make connections, right? And so I remember, so I've been here since 1980 when it started off as Worcester Magazine, really since the beginning of the Business Journal. And I think back in the day, we had a business leader event. We had we figured out how to have a reception for one business leader. That was our first event.
Yep.
And it was, do we charge $5? I'm not sure. And really, over time, we are in the events business.
Yeah.
And we probably do a dozen of them. And so it's a great way for people to not only, you know, see awards, see a seminar or something, you know, on the economic outlook or on the future of healthcare. Like, there's a lot of, you know, substance that we talk about there. But it's also, some of them are kind of networking awards events as well. So that's a big part of our business. And I think, you know, community is, despite the pandemic, a lot of it is still kind of face-to-face and knowing folks regionally, and that's how connections get made. So we kind of try and help the business community do that as well.
And you mentioned the business, obviously the business audience is your biggest audience. But one of the things I think that's important to think about is the business news you cover has such an impact on everybody. These business stories have such an implication in terms of jobs, in terms of the economic success, in terms of the revenues for the cities and sort of thing. And I think it's neat what you guys do in terms of making it people, I think the average reader sees that. You make it so they can understand what's happening and how it impacts not just the business community, but the broader community. Is that a challenge for you?
It definitely can be. I mean, businesses have all sorts of their own language, you know. Some things that maybe right off the street, you're not going to know, even like a profit and loss statement, which is one of the more basic ones. It's not that hard to put that in layman's terms because, you know, as the journalists in the newsroom, it's not like we're coming into this with like MBAs or, you know, PhDs in molecular biology or something. So, you know, we need to understand it first before we write it. And I've said this to a number of reporters, like when you'll get an announcement from a life sciences company and they'll explain what they're doing and like literally be an entire paragraph of like T-cell and Biogen and just things that no one understands unless you have a degree in that. So like really our first mission is understanding what the story is about ourselves. And then that's how we translate it to the reader. I don't think we really run into a whole lot of too much jargon for our reader because at the point where we're explaining it to ourselves, like we're reaching that basic understanding where we'll reach our whole audience. So even if, you know, you're running a real estate agency and we're writing about, you know, a life sciences research and development project, you're going to be able to understand how that relates to you in an understandable way.
Now, Brad, prior to coming here, you worked at a number of different publications, covering some different news stories and also, covering politics as well. Has having that background, did that help you come to this area and help you better translate that business news in layman's terms for the community?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's sort of the basic training of a journalist. I really love business news. I wasn't, when I first started out as a reporter, I wasn't really gravitating towards it because it sounds kind of dry when you think about it.
So what changed? What ended up drawing you here?
So here's the thing. When you're covering politics, you're covering what people say and what they can say might not actually be what they feel. When you're covering business journalism, you're covering what people do. And it's very clear what your mission is, what your thought process is. When you make sort of these hard business decisions about, you know, I mean, there's a thousand one decisions they make, whether you're hiring people, you're laying off people, whether or not you're choosing to expand. Like a politician might talk about how great Gardner is, but like, you know, if, you know, a business is actually investing into, you know, Gardner right now, they could, that's actually showing what they do. And I think there's a lot of substance behind business decisions that way. And that's, you know, it would drive the economy, it would drive people's lives and everything along those lines. And frankly, I started with Peter's company back in 2010 at Hartford Business Journal, which he also owns and co-owns. And, you know, I just fell in love with business journalism then. And I'm still in love with it today.
And Peter, as you alluded to earlier in the podcast, 1980 or so, when you started with Worcester Magazine, what's kept you here covering these stories for so long? What's kept it fresh for you throughout the years?
That's interesting. I'd never been bored, and every day has gone by quickly, right? And so whenever I had one job when I got out in 79, there was one job where the days were long and I looked at my watch at 3 o'clock and thinking, when is 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock going to arrive? And ever since that job, I've never had it here. I sort of, you know, I started off in sales, got into sales management. I was a publisher of the previous publication to Worcester Business Journal called Business Worcester, you know, at the age of 29. So I sort of just got in it and got a certain amount of responsibility. And then I've just stayed with it. And then in 2007, myself and another partner bought Worcester Business Journal and Hartford Business Journal and Main Biz, which is sort of our three, that's our company today, which is three business publications in three different markets, bought the company. So I find it fascinating. We can make a difference in a community. We can advocate, and again, which is different than the news, right? But we can bring values to what we do, right? So, for instance, we pick business leaders of the year, right? And they have to be someone who's done, as Brad suggested, had a real economic impact and been outstanding leaders. And yet we also require as a dimension of that leadership, sort of what is their, the lens of what are they giving back to the community? What are the values of this organization? What have they actually done, not just talked about, related to, you know, making a difference here? So I think, you know, there's a lot of leverage, even though we're a relatively small organization, there's a lot of leverage to how we are a player in this community. And I hope that we, you know, while we report on the truth, we also can play an advocacy role by what we pay attention to and how we go about sort of honoring different things or focusing events and that kind of thing. So
nowadays, in addition to competing with other media groups, other print groups, there's digital competition, there's podcasts, there's so many other different ways that people are getting their media. How do you maintain your reader's attention? How do you keep your audience engaged each issue digitally and in print?
I would say, just philosophically, when we talk about sort of digital print, events, we're in the end, we're format agnostic. And so traditionally we are a print publication, right? And we still have a biweekly print publication. And that's actually remains exceedingly popular among our core audience of business owners and senior managers. On top of that, we've grown tremendously in terms of our web coverage. We're updating news stories. We're producing a daily e-news of business stories. We do a niched real estate newsletter as well. We got focus sections in the newsletter on Metro West, on healthcare. So we're delivering digitally, and I would, the news digitally. When Brad says we're breaking stuff, we're not breaking it in the print pub. We're breaking it by running it online. We've got, in excess of 30,000 different social media followers, number one being LinkedIn, but also, X and Facebook and Instagram, right? So we've got a following and we're doing social media updates. So I think we're getting our stories in front of the audience where they are. We're not on TikTok at this point. We don't think that's a core social media yet for our business audience.
You and I are going to have to get a lot better at dancing.
Yeah. TikTok, so. But, so I think we're finding them where they're looking for the news. And then I mentioned the events. Obviously, that's not delivering news stories, but quite often there's, panels and conversations there that that deliver a lot of substance. And then Brad's team will many times do a write-up, a story recapping, some panel discussion, right, about the economy or healthcare, whatever. So we're getting our information out in platforms that our readers want to find it in.
And, throughout the years, we've seen the consolidation of media. And as you mentioned, you and another individual owning these three publications, you have Worcester roots. That's got to be such an advantage for a media company to have local ownership in 2024 when we keep seeing more and more publications being bought out at the national level and run by companies that aren't even remotely near where these publications are going out.
There aren't that many of us, locally owned media organizations. You look at the daily newspapers, be it in Fitchburg or Worcester, and where there was at one point, a local publisher who would have had the job for 5 or 10 years, right, and had community connections and been on the ground and been able to influence, things sort of in that city or in that region. And I think that's just no longer the case. I mean, the media landscape has changed. That's not that those companies, actively disinvested. It's really just the economics of that, which has also touched, as we, we're talking before our interview, the radio industry as well, right? Sort of the resources that were there to kind of invest in local staff, aren't there. So I think we play, not because we got bigger, but we play a more important role in our communities because there are fewer people doing the kind of reporting that, that we do.
So how do you meet that demand?
We've been, not only are we a Worcester County specifically, and we make it, we're really conscious of that in the news stories, in the balance of news stories, in whether it's daily or in the print pub every 2 weeks. We're conscious of that in people winning our 40 Under 40 awards, right? They're from throughout Central Mass. And also something that we did consciously probably 25, 30 years ago is we looked and said, where does Worcester County end to the east? Mm-hmm. We said, this is a very funky little, if you look at the lines of Worcester County, it's like Marlboro is in Middlesex County. Wait a minute, Marlboro's like, 16 minutes down the road. So we cover a patch of Metro West. It's probably 18 communities that are not, quote unquote, in Worcester County, but they're the 495 belt. And just we've sort of drawn this line because we feel that Greater Boston, Boston Business Journal, right, are sort of our competitor to the east. 95% of what they're writing about is Route 128 and in. Mm-hmm. And that companies along that 495 belt, not as far as Lowell, but sort of in the kind of the central region, very much, don't have someone focused on them. So we've also, if you look at the stories, we're really writing a lot about that what's going on along 495 as well. So again, not technically Worcester County, but we consider it our market.
Well, it's important that you cover that area. Otherwise, there will be a news desert in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's covered in Greater Boston, certainly. But we just think that, you know, Central Mass is growing, and it is growing. And I think that we're all benefiting. Well, benefiting is not the right word, but, you know, the cost of living in Greater Boston, the cost of locating a company, the cost of finding employees. You know, Greater Boston is an incredible engine, and, you know, it drives the Massachusetts economy, no question. And Central Mass has picked up a lot of residents, and a lot of companies have expanded here because of its relative affordability, right? And I think that's going to continue to be the case. So I think the region is going to continue to play a more important role in the state's economy.
Going to step aside for a quick break, but we'll be back here on the Inside North Central Massachusetts podcast.
Do you have the right high-quality employees to successfully compete and grow your business? Franklin Professional Associates' team of recruiters in Leominster is here to help you hire the best so you can be your best. Visit franklinprofessionals.com today.
Welcome back to the Inside North Central Massachusetts podcast. Travis here. We're chatting today with Brad Kane, the editor, and Peter Stanton, the CEO and publisher of the Worcester Business Journal. We're down at 172 Shrewsbury Street in Worcester. And as the region continues to play the more important role in the state's economy, how is the Worcester Business Journal changing the stories that you cover to meet that increased awareness and then increased demand out here?
So a bunch of different ways, and I did want to jump back a little bit in what you talked about. You know, news deserts, it's not technically a news desert because there are sort of publications that kind of lightly cover the region. And a little bit to your point of like a lot of the nationally owned local media organizations have been pulling back. You know, initially when I started here, you know, journalists are all extremely competitive and, you know, we want to be the first to break the story. And I really liked being able to like beat all the other local media. And then, you know, after a while, when you saw them like continuing to cut back and then just not having the new news resources that, you know, we do, it makes me kind of sad.
Yeah.
And you see that like up in North County where, you know, you don't have the media outlets that you had even 5 years ago, or the, like the number of reporters on the ground. So, you know, when we approach stories, we're very conscious of, as Peter mentioned, we want to cover the whole Central Mass region. You know, for example, I don't know if you saw Fitchburg State announced the finalist for their presidency because their president who'd been there, you know, retired, and they're bringing in new people. And it doesn't look like anyone's reported on that yet. We're actually working on that story right now. And that's the way that, you know, we want to cover the news that's important to the whole region. Obviously, the head of a institution as important as Fitchburg State is going to impact everyone in Central Mass. But of course, that means a lot to the people in, you know, Fitchburg, Leominster, Gardner, and things along those lines. So we really want to have that community news and that community awareness of like what's going on and try to cover, you know, it's a almost a $50 billion economy in Central Massachusetts. And, you know, we really want to cover it robustly as much as we can with our staff. And I think trying to hit on the important parts, particularly the important parts that are important to the business community that people we primarily cover.
And you mentioned that there are less journalists now. And I remember I've had conversations with Mayor Mazzarella, and he talks about the fact that when he first started as mayor, you know, when things would happen, there would be two or three reporters just always in City Hall at the time. Now, as the publications, as you mentioned, don't have as many resources, is it hard for publications like yourself to find people that are getting into journalism that want to go out there and cover the stories and want to have that boots on the ground approach?
I would say not now. There was a sort of a trickle-down effect in the media industry where I think you saw like a lot of the larger media organizations were having a hard time finding people they traditionally hired. That was about 2020, 2021. And I was still getting, you know, great applicants and, you know, having to turn away people that I would have hired if I had another vacancy. And then I think about a year ago, we saw a little bit of the talent squeeze, but that's ramped back up. And, you know, we actually just hired two new people, and they're both... One started back in October. He's been fantastic. Another one actually just started last month. And she's turning out to be very good as well. So I think that talent level is starting to ramp back up again.
And for you as the editor to have two new people on your staff, you know, how does it make you feel when you go into these publications knowing that you've got those additional resources?
Great. You know, it's nice to have smart, hungry people that, you know, want to report on the big stories. We just finished... Eric Casey, the reporter that started in October, just finished sort of a 4,000-word two-part epic about how the Canal District has changed since the WUSOX made the decision to move there. And you know, that kind of storytelling is important to us. And I think that we're able to do more of that and kind of make those bigger stories that have kind of a wider ranging impact. Makes me feel great as an editor. That's actually what kind of gets me up in the morning.
You know, Brad, I just want to add, you know, Brad's using the word storytelling, right? Which means you've got to have a good headline, you know, that opening paragraph has to get you interested, right? And this is sort of the art of it. But behind it, you know, we're very, we rely on data, right? So Brad's team looked into what is the, how is real estate, what are the valuations in these very specific, in this area versus the rest of the city. So there were a lot of analytics when we say, you know, that that district, the value of real estate has gone up by 80-something percent and it's 41%, you know, citywide was the average. That's all based on a good amount of research and some data. So, you know, it's we're telling the story, which can be, which includes some anecdotes, but it's sort of the core of that piece is that we've really gone in and studied the numbers and we can support that. So there's meat on the bone there.
And in addition to those stories, which are backed by data, your publication's also been known for the weekly polls that you mentioned, but also the number of lists, which are always backed by a ton of data. How do you curate those lists and keep them fresh? Because every time a new one comes out, it's always exciting to see which communities rank where, which businesses rank where. How do you keep those lists fresh year after year and publication after publication?
You know, I'll just take you back in time. It's funny. In the old days, you would go, oh, well, if I want, you know, the top electricians, I'll look in the yellow pages, right? That was sort of, you sort of had a de facto, you know, source for who are the players in different categories. We business people, let's say you're running a law firm, an accounting firm, or a bank, although, you know, a lot of those people have egos, right? And maybe they have two or three employees, but maybe they're at 10 or 15, and maybe they aspire to get to 25 or 30. Well, we've got a list, and you can see the biggest accounting firm in Central Mass, and you can see who's 7th, and you can see who's 12th, right? And so it's really interesting over time. It's a scorecard. It's not an issue of merit to be the biggest, right? You can have some excellent firms at any size in these categories that we run. But those lists, there's no other place. You don't, I'm going to translate the, used to be the yellow pages, now it's Google, but Google doesn't put it in any order. Google's selling ads to a lot of the people on that list. And there's no sense of who's, what scale each one is, what their specialties are in a really distilled way. So that continues to be, you know, a really popular thing. Brad can talk about, you know, we got a research department that basically is in the old fashioned way, calling people and following up.
Yeah. Luckily I have two, superstars in our research department, which is separate. We actually share it with our two other sister publications as well. But it's sort of a no stone unturned. Like, you know, they'll send surveys to all the businesses, but not everyone responds. You know, you can look at third-party data lists. You can get, you know, some information on some companies from, like, you know, U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. You know, there's publicly available data. There's, like, organizations like the Brewers Association, which does a good compiling of, like, local breweries, that kind of thing. Both of our researchers have been with us a long time, and they're just fantastic. But it's definitely a leave no stone unturned. And, you know, it's funny, like, we'll have the list of, like, the largest manufacturers, and something like Dell hasn't updated their data with us in a while, and they're a private company. They're kind of a hard nut to crack. And, you know, our lead researcher, Stephanie Maha, will, like, she'll just give me a constant update of, like, oh, I tried this and I tried that, and, you know, this and that and the other. And they can tell you how many lists they do a year, but it's something, is it 300,000 companies between the three properties or something like that? It's an insane number. And they just do a fantastic job. And a lot of it's just, you know, boots on the ground and a lot of hard work.
And I want to continue to highlight your staff, because I understand you recently won a number of awards in March, 8 to be exact, from the New England Newspaper and Press Association's 2023 New England Better Newspaper Competition. Can you talk a little bit about those awards and what that means in terms of the successes of your staff?
Sure. Yeah. And NEMPA is kind of one of two that we pay very close attention to. NEMPA is obviously the journalism organization for all of New England. And then as a business journal, we belong to the Alliance of Area Business Publishers, which are other business journals like ours throughout the country, as well as Canada and Australia, actually. And, you know, we'll compete with them as well for these competitions. what I say on awards is like, you know, we want to put out excellent news content every single day. And the awards aren't necessarily the first thing that come to mind when we're developing stories along those lines. But at the same time, like when I see a story really coming together and like really hitting the mark, like the Canal District piece that I mentioned, you know, you'll see it's like, oh, this is going to do really well because you're just seeing, you know, reporters grow and do excellent work. And, you know, the awards are sort of a nice reward for their hard work. You know, again, you'll think of like, I'll submit for like all these awards. And like, there's like one story that I thought was like our absolute best one of the year. And, you know, had this huge wide readership impact, and then it won't win an award. And then you're like, oh, why did that one win? Not win, but still, you know, it's great for the staff. You know, it's great for us. I think between the two organizations, we're averaging about, you know, 10 to 12 each year for the two. And, you know, it's an incredible honor to be just, especially knowing who you're competing against with both NEMPA and AABP. We love it, frankly.
And I think on the awards, we fight above our weight class.
Yeah.
Meaning we get, I think, a disproportionate for relatively small, right? We're not based in, you know, Chicago or, you know, statewide and, you know, some much larger area, right? We're fighting out of Central Mass, which is a, you know, smaller market. And so Brad and his team do a great job.
Now coming up, you've got your 35th anniversary, big year for the Worcester Business Journal.
Yes.
Do you have anything special planned for the 35th, or how are you acknowledging this?
We do. So we've had, we've really made a lot out of having a big special anniversary issue in the past. And it's funny, you know, sometimes you see companies go, oh, it's our birthday, you know, we're 50. And then you go, okay, well, what is that? How do you translate that into meaning something to your customers or the community? So for us, the fact that it's our birthday is very secondary. Okay, Worcester Business Journal, whoop-de-doo. What we use it as a lens to go, what's been happening in this community for the last, in this case, 35 years? How do we take a look back? And just as importantly, how do we look through that lens forward? What kind of stories have driven, you know, the economy, and what kind of industries are growing, and what's going to happen in the future? Because I think history can be fascinating, but people don't want to just read a historical piece, right? They want to have some fun with that, but they want to know, okay, so what do these leaders think, and how do we use that to reflect and you know, kind of put our lens on the future? So that'll be a really big special edition. We're doing it all kind of coated stock magazine size. It's coming out second issue in October. We're going to have a reception, but that's not really the point. I think that the issue itself is going to be just have a lot of spectacular content, and we're doing it in the style that I think it'll, you know, stick around. And coffee table is a bit of an antiquated term, but I think it'll be a real keep around for a lot of readers. The other thing I would add is, since I've been here in this position for 40 years, I know a lot of other people who've been around, but there are new leaders coming into our community all the time who don't have the context of what, you know, how did this organization get there? What were those big stories? And I think for folks who, you know, have been in this market 5, 10, 15 years, some of that older stuff can be really, really informative, because, you know, there aren't stories running daily about sort of how did this industry grow here and so forth, and who have been the players that made it happen. So I think it serves a couple of purposes.
Absolutely. You know, as someone who receives a copy of the Worcester Business Journal, I can tell you it's very easy to consume each week, and it's great to have that perspective on some of the stories and to have that pulse right there at your fingertips. I can flip through that publication and know exactly what's happening this week and what's actually coming up in the coming weeks. And, you know, coming into the business community 3 years ago into this new role at the Chamber is very helpful in terms of bringing me up to speed. And when you talk about emerging leaders, it kind of hits on the next thing I want to cover. You like to always acknowledge the 40 Under 40 Awards, which really recognize some of those emerging leaders coming up in North Central Massachusetts. It's also a big year for those awards, in addition to your anniversary at the Worcester Business Journal, coming up on the 25th anniversary. How long are the nominations open for? Where can people nominate individuals? And what are you planning special for that 25th anniversary?
So I think what we're planning on doing is a combination of two things, right? So every year we've had sort of 40 people under the age of 40 getting recognized as being rising stars. Some of them are entrepreneurs running their own organizations. Others are sort of, you know, growing their responsibilities inside of a larger organization. They represent a whole bunch of different industries, the full geography of our coverage area. So it's funny, in the when this award was the 25th year of 40 to 40, when we started it, we said, oh, there aren't enough young people around in Central Mass. We'll try it once. Maybe we'll do this every other year because we're just not going to be able to find enough, you know, vital young folks every year. Well, boy, we couldn't have been more wrong. We get in excess of 200 nominations for those 40 spots. Obviously, some of them, there's new nominations. Some of the nominations carry over unless you're 39 and then, you know, your life ends until you retire at 65. But so anyways, there's a tremendous dynamic to that event. Throw on top of that, we've got 25 years, 25 times 40 is 1,000, so close to 1,000 people who've been rewarded, who've received this award. We're going to look back, and Brad and his team are going to kind of pick out who are some of the highest achievers and kind of profile where have some of these leaders gone since they got the award, whether it was, you know, 18 years ago or 24 or, you know, 7 or 8. So I think we're going to have a, and then we're going to bring some of them into the event as well. So this is our biggest event of the year, 450, 500 people at Mechanics Hall. We expect it to be, this to be even ramped up. So it'll be over the top.
Now, you mentioned the challenge the first year of wondering if you would have enough to continue it year after year. Did you ever see the reputation of the 40 under 40 achieving the level that it has now? Because if you're in the business community, getting awarded that, it's a huge badge of honor. I mean, that's, people put it on their resumes.
They totally put it on their resumes. Absolutely. I know, we see it. You know, in fact, we've had people, we get resumes, you know, Brad's always running, you know, someone who gets promotions, you know, he sees on there, oh, this person came from Baltimore. They were on the Baltimore Business Journal's 40 under 40 or, you know, some other market, not just here. Yeah, it's the brand. So it's not, WBJ produces it. We do similar events in Maine and in Hartford. It's a national brand, really, right? Because you got business journals and that, frankly, Forbes has other publications who jumped on that bandwagon. You know, so I think it has a national brand, and but locally it just really, really has resonated and gotten stronger over time.
Did you ever think it was going to reach the level of success that it has over the years and the level of notoriety?
No, but it also makes it harder for people to get into the class, and it really, you know, I think the standard, you know, for making it, I don't want to say it's hard. I went to Holy Cross, right? And a lot of people who would go to a different school go, oh my God, I couldn't even get in there today, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if our early class feels that they could make the cut this year. I don't think that's necessarily the case. But I think, you know, the bottom line is this. We're a community. There's plenty of us in the old guard, including me. But there's a great dynamic among young leaders. We got a lot of them in this community. And our future, as I talked about 35th anniversary, you know, looking forward to the future. Our future is based on, you know, the quality of that group, how well we support and mentor them, and the ethic that, of giving back to the community and all those things that we can sort of get them, you know, to buy into. And I think, you know, so many of them have already are in that, you know, in that sort of mold right now where they're future business leaders of the year coming through this, you know, this lens.
And to speak a little bit, you know, about the winners, it is a tremendous honor for them, I think. You know, when you're in your, you know, 20s and 30s, like, you could, and this is talking to hundreds of winners over the years, you know, you're kind of toiling a little bit in obscurity. Like, you're usually not in your company, or you've just founded a company that's still kind of finding its feet. So a lot of times, you know, when you're, say, 34, and you're getting the 40 under 40, that's really the first time you're getting this sort of level of validation, and you're kind of being broadcast as, you know, a player in the business community. One of the things I love about the 40 under 40 is the class is always very enthusiastic, which allows us to be very creative in like how we present them every year. And we'll go out and do creative photo shoots. And usually they're all up for like, you know, let's hang from the ceiling or like, you know, jump off of this big thing and get a photo. And it turns to be really, really great. Answer your initial question too. So nominations are open for this year. I don't know the date. It's the first Friday in May is the deadline for the nominations this year. You can wbjournal.com. You have to go to the 40 under 40 events page, but that's where you can nominate whoever you want, as long as they meet the criteria.
So you mentioned going to your website to nominate folks. Obviously, people can go to wbjournal.com to read your stories. And if they're looking to advertise or if they think that there's a breaking story that really needs to be in there, how do they get in touch with you? How do they contact you and your staff?
So there's a bunch of ways. One, if you're on the website, you just scroll to the bottom. There's a link to the staff. I think there's actually a staff link, and it has all our email addresses, all our phone extensions. That's usually the best way to get a hold of us. Me personally, emailing me is kind of the most effective way to get a hold of me because I monitor that pretty quickly. You can always call and reach out as well. Yeah, I think that's really the best way to get a hold of us. And, you know, I tell everyone, like, we want to know all the information, so don't hold back. You know, if someone's doing, you know, like a small honor or something that, you know, we determine at the time, it's not necessarily rise to the level of like being a reported news story, but it's still good for us to know because it can always feed into something a little bit later. So, you know, don't be shy about reaching out to us with news tips, or if you're a company that, you know, has a big promotion or you're changing over, you know, a leader or something along those lines. You know, we want to hear about all of it. You know, it might not be a news story right away, but again, it's great for us to know as much as we can about all the players in the Central Mass business community.
Brad and Peter, I know you both have very busy schedules, so I want to thank you for taking the time today to have me out here for the podcast, and we'll be back with another new episode next week. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it, Travis.
You've been listening to Inside North Central Massachusetts. This podcast is produced by the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce. For more information on this episode, links to other episodes, or if you have any questions, please visit northcentralmass.com.